Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always. What are we digging into today?
This time we're going back in time, all the way to 1824.
Oh, wow.
To tackle a landmark Supreme Court case.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Osborne v. Bank of the United States.
That rings a bell.
You're actually prepping to narrate a segment on this for LexPlug.
That's right. I'm excited to share it with the LexPlug listeners.
Well, that's where we come in. We're diving straight into the source material.
The Supreme Court opinion itself.
Yeah, exactly. Written by none other than Chief Justice John Marshall himself.
The legend himself. His opinions are always such a treat to read.
So as you prepare for your LexPlug segment, what should we be focusing on today?
Well, since the LexPlug audience is pretty savvy when it comes to legal stuff.
Yeah, they definitely know their stuff.
We want to make sure we hit those key arguments.
The core of the case.
Exactly. And really understand the lasting impact it's had.
Okay, so big picture stuff, but also those fascinating details that make it come alive. Awesome. Now, 1824, that's pretty early in American history.
Oh, for sure. The U.S. government was practically a toddler at that point.
So can you paint the scene for us? What led to this case?
Well, the very existence of the Bank of the United States was a huge point of contention back then.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, it was controversial from the start.
I can imagine.
And Osborne v. Bank of the United States centers around Ohio trying to tax the bank.
Ah, so we're talking about states' rights versus federal power already.
You got it. It's that classic American tension playing out on the legal stage.
Always a recipe for fireworks. So how did the bank fight back against Ohio's attempt to tax them?
Well, they had a two-pronged approach. First, they focused on the specific wording of the law itself.
So even back then, battles over legal language were crucial.
Absolutely. They argued that the law didn't explicitly give Ohio the power to tax them. It was a very detail-oriented argument.
Makes sense.
And their second argument was more about the bigger picture.
Oh, okay. What was that?
They claimed that even if the law did allow Ohio to tax them, it would be unconstitutional.
Now we're getting to the heart of it.
Right. This is where things get really interesting.
Lay it on me.
The bank argued that because Congress had given them a charter to operate, this implied certain powers, including the right to sue in federal court.
Interesting. So they were trying to sidestep state authority.
You could say that. They were essentially going over Ohio's head, straight to the federal level.
And what was their reasoning for that?
They argued that if states were allowed to tax them willy-nilly, it would essentially destroy the bank.
Ran them dry.
Exactly. They said it would eat up all their profits until they couldn't function anymore.
That's a pretty strong argument, from a business perspective at least.
Definitely. They were fighting for their survival, basically.
But how did they tie this argument to the Constitution? Where's the legal basis?
Well, this is where another landmark case comes into play, McCulloch v. Maryland.
Ah, McCulloch. Now, for our listeners who might need a little refresher.
Right, not everyone has these cases memorized.
What made that case so important?
McCulloch v. Maryland, which was decided a few years earlier in 1819, really established this idea of implied powers.
Implied powers, right.
The Supreme Court essentially said that the Constitution gives the federal government powers that go beyond what's explicitly written down.
So reading between the lines, in a way.
Exactly. It's about looking at the spirit of the Constitution, its broader purpose.
I see.
And it affirmed that Congress has the authority to do what it needs to do to carry out its duties, even if those powers aren't spelled out word for word in the Constitution.
Fascinating. So how does this connect back to the Osborne case?
Well, in Osborne, Chief Justice Marshall is building on the foundation laid by McCulloch.
Okay, he's using it as precedent.
Exactly. He's saying, look, if Congress has the power to create the bank,
which it did,
then it also has the power to protect the bank from being interfered with by states.
Ah, clever. So he's weaving this case into a larger tapestry of constitutional law. Now, I've been looking through Marshall's opinion, and I was really struck by some of his language. He doesn't hold back, does he?
He's known for his powerful writing, that's for sure.
Like, he compares destroying a bank's trade to a total privation of sustenance during life.
Wow.
And he even likens the bank to a contractor supplying the military.
Interesting. He's really using vivid imagery to drive home his point.
It's not your typical dry legal language.
Well, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes him such an effective writer. He understands the power of analogy and metaphor.
He's making these complex legal arguments relatable.
Right. And those powerful comparisons really help hammer home the idea that the bank is vital for the government to function.
So he's appealing to logic, but also to emotion.
Absolutely, a master strategist.
He also makes some interesting comparisons between the bank and institutions like the Mint and the Post Office.
Oh, yeah. That's a key part of his argument, too.
What was he getting at there?
Well, by drawing those parallels to the Mint and the Post Office, Marshall's saying, look, the bank, even though it's privately owned,
yeah,
it still serves a vital public function, just like those other institutions.
So he's essentially arguing that even though it's a private entity, it's working for the public good.
Exactly. And that strengthens his argument for implied powers.
Which, as you mentioned earlier, is something our Lick's Plug listeners will definitely want to hear about.
For sure. It's a concept with a lot of implications even today.
Now, what about Ohio? They didn't just back down, did they? What were their arguments for wanting to tax the bank?
Oh, absolutely not. They came in swinging.
I bet.
Their main defense was jurisdictional.
Okay.
They claimed the court didn't even have the authority to hear the case.
Interesting tactic.
Because in their view, it was essentially a lawsuit against the state of Ohio itself.
So they're pulling out the 11th Amendment.
Exactly. They said the 11th Amendment protects states from being sued in federal court.
Oh, that's a tricky one. How did Marshall navigate that?
Well, he got pretty clever here. Marshall drew a distinction between suing a state directly and suing specific state officials.
I see.
He argued that this lawsuit wasn't against Ohio itself, but rather against the officials who were trying to enforce the tax.
That's some impressive legal maneuvering. So he found a loophole that allowed the case to proceed.
You could say that. He found a way to sidestep the 11th Amendment.
Masterful. Now, was this a unanimous decision? Or did any of the justices disagree with Marshall's opinion?
Well, there was actually a dissenting opinion written by Justice Johnson.
Interesting. What were his main concerns?
Johnson's dissent focused on a few key things. He was very worried about the potential for federal overreach.
Okay. A valid concern for sure.
He argued that Congress never intended to give the bank such broad rights.
Mm.
And he was also afraid that this ruling would significantly expand the power of federal courts.
So he was sounding the alarm about potential unintended consequences.
Yeah, he was basically saying, hold on, let's think about the bigger picture here.
Always important to consider those different perspectives.
Absolutely. It shows that even back then, these were complicated issues with strong arguments on both sides.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
For sure. It's a reminder that law is rarely black and white.
Well said. Now, let's talk about the lasting impact of Osborne. What were some of the long-term ripple effects of this decision?
Well, Osborne v. Bank of the United States really solidified the power of the federal government over the states in certain areas.
Interesting. So it reinforced what McCulloch had already established.
Exactly. It really doubled down on the principle of implied powers,
making it clear that the federal government's reach goes beyond what's explicitly stated in the Constitution.
Right. And this had a huge impact on the development of constitutional law, especially regarding the Necessary and Proper Clause.
Okay. Definitely something our Lex Plug listeners will want to know about.
Definitely. And that clause is still debated today.
Absolutely. It's not just some dusty old legal concept.
Right. It's very much a living, breathing part of our legal system.
Well, I think we've laid a really solid foundation here.
We've covered a lot of ground.
Let's take a quick break to gather our thoughts.
Okay. Sounds good.
And when we come back, we'll figure out how you can turn all of this rich legal history into a truly captivating Lex Plug segment.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Okay, so we've really dug into Osborne v. Bank of the United States.
We've gone deep.
Now, the big question is, how do you turn all of this into a compelling segment for Lex Plug?
That's the challenge, isn't it? Making this stuff come alive for the listeners.
Exactly. So what's the most important point you want to drive home for the Lex Plug audience?
Well, I think it has to be the concept of implied powers.
Ah, yes, that core idea that really came to the forefront in this case.
And how Osborne solidified its place in American constitutional law.
Because it's still relevant today, right? Mm. We're still debating the scope of federal power.
Oh, absolutely. It's a question that never really goes away, does it?
Nope. But how do you make this engaging? It's not exactly light dinner conversation.
Right. We don't want to just throw a bunch of legal jargon at them.
No dry law lectures.
Definitely not. But remember how we were talking about Marshall's writing?
Oh, yeah. His super vivid language.
Well, we can use that to our advantage.
Okay, I'm listening.
Like, instead of just saying, the bank argued this and that,
uh-huh,
we can bring in some of those powerful comparisons he used.
Like the whole privation of sustenance thing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's memorable. It paints a picture in the listener's mind.
It's like he's saying, if you destroy the bank's trade, it's like taking away someone's food supply.
Right. He's making it real, relatable.
So you're thinking, use those quotes to break up the legal analysis.
Yeah, and to make it more impactful. And we can weave in the political context, too.
Ah, yes, the whole states' rights versus federal power showdown.
Exactly. It's almost like a legal thriller, isn't it?
A little bit. You've got competing interests, high stakes, and a brilliant legal mind at the center of it all.
And speaking of brilliance, there were some really key turning points in this legal battle.
Like what?
Well, the bank's decision to sue in federal court in the first place, that was a bold move.
It was like they were saying, we're not playing by your rules, Ohio.
Exactly. And then Marshall sidestepping the 11th Amendment issue.
Oh, yeah, that was clever.
By focusing on those state officials instead of the state itself, he cleared the way for the case to proceed.
He outsmarted them.
You could say that. He found a way to navigate those tricky legal waters.
So it wasn't just a legal victory, it was a strategic victory.
Absolutely. Remember, the bank's very existence was on the line.
If Ohio had won.
Yeah, other states might have tried to do the same thing.
It'd have been a domino effect.
Exactly. So Marshall's ruling, it wasn't just about this one case.
It was about the bigger picture.
It ensured the bank's survival and its role in the national economy.
Wow. High stakes indeed. Now, what about the dissenting opinion? How do you plan to incorporate Justice Johnson's perspective?
Well, I think it's crucial to present a balanced view.
Of course, can't just ignore the other side.
Right. We need to acknowledge Johnson's concerns about federal overreach.
He had a point, didn't he? The potential for the government to become too powerful.
Absolutely. We can frame his dissent as a sort of cautionary tale.
Yeah. Like that.
Highlight the importance of safeguarding states' rights.
So it's not just about being pro-bank or anti-bank.
It's about showing the complexity of the issue.
Those different viewpoints.
Exactly. Encourage the listeners to form their own conclusions.
Always a good approach. Now, we have the big picture, the colorful details, the dissenting opinion. How do you tie in the long-term impact? Make it relevant to today's listeners.
Well, we can draw parallels to modern-day debates about federalism.
Ooh, good idea.
Think about things like healthcare, environmental regulations.
Yeah, those are hot topics even today.
And they often involve those same arguments about the balance of power between the federal government and the states.
So you're saying even though Osborne was decided almost 200 years ago,
yeah,
the questions it raised are still relevant today.
Absolutely. We're still grappling with those same fundamental issues.
It's incredible how a case from the 1800s can still resonate so strongly today.
It's a testament to how carefully our system of government was designed.
And how those early legal battles really shaped the course of American history.
Exactly. And I think that's a message that will resonate with the LexBlog audience.
For sure. Now, I have an idea for a really powerful ending to your segment, something that'll leave your listeners thinking.
Okay, I'm all ears.
What if you end with a provocative question about the limits of federal power?
Ooh, I like where you're going with this.
Something that directly connects Osborne to the issues we're facing today.
Yeah, that'd be great. But what kind of question are we talking about?
Well, maybe something like, if the federal government can create a bank and protect it from state taxation, where do we draw the line?
Oh, wow, yeah.
What are the limits of its power? How do we know when it's stepping over the line?
That's perfect. It really gets to the heart of the matter.
It makes people think, right? It's not just about the bank anymore.
No, it's about those bigger questions about the role of government in our lives.
Exactly. I think that's a great way to leave your LexPlug listeners with something to ponder.
I'm sold. Thanks. This has been super helpful.
I'm glad. I think you're going to create a fantastic segment. You got a great handle on the material, and I can't wait to hear what you come up with.
Thanks. Now I just need to put it all together.
You got this.
Yeah.
And for everyone listening, keep those legal minds sharp. And we'll see you on the next deep dive.
That was a lot.
It was. But I think we covered some serious ground today.
I feel like I have a much better understanding of Osborne now.
That's great. And, you know, as you're putting together your LexPlugs segment,
remember
that the necessary and proper clause, the one that's so central to this case.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still being debated today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just look at recent Supreme Court cases.
Exactly. So it's not just some historical footnote.
It's still shaping legal interpretations.
And for our listeners out there, think about this.
Okay.
Where do we draw the line between what's genuinely necessary and proper for the government to do its job? And what crosses the line into federal overreach?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It really is. It gets to the heart of our system of government and how we balance power.
And there's no easy answer, yeah, right?
Nope. It's constantly evolving.
It's all about finding that sweet spot between a strong national government and individual liberty.
a balancing act that we're still figuring out.
Exactly. And cases like Osborne give us a window into how those debates have played out over time.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes legal history so fascinating.
It's not just about the past, it's about understanding the present.
Well said. Well, I think you're more than ready to tackle your Lexaplug segment now.
I feel a lot more confident, that's for sure.
You got this. And for everyone listening, keep those legal minds sharp.
And keep exploring those fascinating cases.
We'll catch you on our next deep dive.